If you do not believe what I am saying, just think for a moment. How could that drop of sperm have believed you if you had told it that God created another world outside its world of darkness? A world where there is a sky, a sun, moonlight, provinces, towns, villages, gardens, where there exist created beings, kings, millionaires, people in fine health, sick people, the blind? No intelligence would believe such a far-fetched story. And yet there exists outside these shadows and this food of blood another world altogether and quite another food. And although the drop of sperm denied and ignored such a possibility, yet it could not avoid arriving at it because it was forced outside. And one day you will find yourself outside this world, which is like a womb. You will leave this earth while in your bodies, and you will enter, while you are still here, breathing and drinking and eating, a vast expanse. And you will know, I promise you, that the words, God's earth is vast, describe this region where the lovers and saints dance and dance forever. I went to Konya 2 years ago, and for about 2 days I couldn't bring myself to go to his grave because, idiotically, I imagined that visiting his grave would be a sad occasion. It's remembering in some faint way that he wasn't here. His words are here, but the glory that he must have been is not here. This is how stupid I was. So after 2 days, I actually went to his grave. And because I was making a film about his life, I read the poems about dying standing by his grave. And in between reading the poems, I got a fit of the giggles so intense that I felt I'd never be able to recover my composure to look sober for BBC, because you have to look sober for BBC. Because what I was feeling standing by that grave was an overwhelming volcano of power that grave was emitting. He wasn't dead. He isn't dead. He's here in a way that none of us yet are here, because he gave himself totally to the presence. And if you give yourself totally to the presence, there is no death ever. The body is gone. But he is more present in the universe now than he has ever been, because of the love that all of us are pouring out to him. And out of that presence, he is speaking to us deathless reminders of what we can become if we dare to. The absolute being creates out of non-existence. What other workshop but non-existence could the creator of existence have? Do you write over what is already written? Do you plant a sapling where there's one growing already? No. So look for a piece of paper no one has written on. Search for a place where nothing has ever been sown. Be a place unsown. A white paper no writing has stained. So the pen of mercy can ennoble you, and the merciful one can sow in your blindness the seed of ecstatic vision. O King of glory, who needs no drums or banners, you have made me mad, and madmen live beyond law. If you look at me from a distance, I'm a stumbling idiot. What you see is fantasy only, a mist of nothing. Step forward yourself now and dare to become nothing, because the nothing I am is the source of the soul, the real soul, that is, not the one black with grief. I without I, you without you, together we'll dive wildly into this burning river. There's only tyranny and misery on the earth, but if you drown in this river, you won't lose your life. Because this is the fire water of eternal life, of grace and mercy. You say you have seen him, but your eyes are two stones. You say you have known him, but nothing in you trembles. You still say I, when you speak of surviving his glory. But no one who has seen it has ever survived. Stay close, my heart, to the one who knows your ways. Come into the shade of the tree that always has fresh flowers. Don't stroll lazily through the bazaar of the perfume makers. Stay in the shop of the sugar seller. If you don't find true balance for yourself, anyone can deceive you. Anyone can trick out a thing of straw and make you take it for gold. Don't squat before a bowl with every boiling pot. In each pot on the fire, you'll find very different things. Not all sugar canes have sugar. Not all abysses are peak. Not all eyes possess vision. Not every sea is full of pearls. Oh, nightingale, with your voice of dark honey, go on lamenting, because only your drunken ecstasy can pierce the rock's hard heart. Surrender yourself. And if you aren't welcomed by the friend, know that something in you is still rebelling inwardly, like a thread that doesn't want to go through the needle's eye. The awakened heart is a lamp. Protect it by the hem of your robe. Hurry and get out of this wind, for the weather is bad. And when you've left this storm, you will come to a fountain. And you'll find a friend there who will always nourish your soul. And with your soul always green, you'll grow into a tall tree, flowering always with sweet, light fruit, whose growth is interior. And when you've accepted that these outrageous possibilities belong to you as your birthright, as the original glory that was seeded in you by that yes that you said before space and time began, that you said on the day of Alast, when you witnessed that the divine beloved was your Lord, when you acknowledge, when you start to begin to imagine that all the outrageous possibilities that all the mystics have been trying to bring home to us really are real and true, something in you breaks open in adoration, and breaks open in awe, and breaks open in wonder at the seed of glory in yourself, and at the glory so merciful that it could give you a seed of that glory to live and nourish. And then you become what Sufis really are. You become a lover. You really start to love back the source that has so infinitely loved you. There's a wonderful tradition in which God is supposed to have said to David, look at the way I love those who have turned their backs on me. Look at how I yearn for them and long for them and pray for them and help them in every way I can to turn their backs again to me. Do you not imagine that I would treat with infinite splendor those who have dared to turn towards me? That's the point. If you start to allow yourself to fall in love, then you turn consciously towards the beloved, and then the nakedness of the primordial intimacy between you and the beloved starts to flash out in the core of your life, flash out in illumined dreams, flash out in visions, flash out in the uncovering of the divine light in your mind, flash out in the growth of an unparalleled power of passion in the core of your heart. And that's when you realize that not only are you a lover in love with the beloved, but the beloved is everything, and the entire world and all the events within it, good or bad, radiant or dark, are words coming from the beloved to you to draw you deeper into sacred passion. Each moment, from all sides, rushes to us the call to love, and we are running to contemplate its vast green field. Do you want to come with us Because this is not the time to stay at home, but to go out and give yourself to the garden. The dawn of joy has arisen, and this is the moment of union, of vision. Oh, kings and queens, masters and mistresses of this time, awaken from your drugged sleep. Straddle the horse of joy. It is here, the moment of our reunion, and the drum of the coming true of promises is beating, and the pathway of heaven is being swept now by angels, and your joy is now, and what remains for tomorrow is just ash. The horses of day have put to flight the armies of the night, and heaven and earth are full of the purity of light. And this is from his table talk. And this is the ultimate advice to a lover, and the ultimate advice to a mystic. The hardest thing to do and to be, but the only thing to do and to be. Always be a lover. Wherever you may be, in whatever situation or circumstance you may find yourself, hunger and thirst and strive always to be a lover and a passionate lover. Because once you possess your heart in love, you will always be a lover in the tomb, at the resurrection, and in heaven forever and ever. Sow wheat and wheat will grow, and wheat will flourish in the fields, and bread will glow in the oven. Majnun wanted to send a letter to his beloved Layla. He seized a pen and wrote, "Your name is on my tongue. Your image haunts my sight. Your memory fills my heart. So where can I write? Your image lives in my eyes. Your name is never away from my tongue. Your memory fills the depths of my soul. So where am I to write a letter, since you are everywhere and in all things?" His pen broke and the page was torn. There are many people whose hearts are brimming with love. Yet although they are real lovers, they don't and can't express themselves. This isn't surprising and presents no obstacle on the quest. What matters is the state of the heart, its longing and passion. A child loves the milk its mother feeds it and draws vigor and help from it. Yet a child cannot define milk or express love of it, saying, "What joy I get from drinking milk. How feeble and distressed I become when I am not drinking it." His whole soul might be on fire for milk, but still he couldn't say anything about it. He accepts the milk, drinks it, and smiles. The joy on his face is all his mother wants. When Llewellyn said how sacred and important every single person's participation was in this conference, in this gathering, I think he meant something like what Rumi is now saying. If you say nothing but radiate love, you will have contributed absolutely to whatever can happen, because you will have added the energy of your sacred passion to being here. You will have lit the fire of your heart and from it radiated a passionate silence of attention. And that is a huge gift. What you see when you open your eyes to love is that this entire universe is not an illusion, is not a dream, but in fact the manifestation of that love. And that love lives in and as every single being and thing in this universe. And every single being and thing, from every flower to every flea to every dancing dolphin to every whale to every old transvestite in the back streets of Rio, is radiating the joy of divine love. Because divine love created everything and lives in and as everything. And what love initiates you is not into the unreality of this manifestation, but into its superreality, its utter sacredness, its utter holiness. And this is why the beings who have come into this dimension of total abandoned love have such an extraordinary rapport with animals. St. Francis had it, and Rumi had it. When he went into the marketplaces of Konya, the dogs would come and dance around him and groan and moan and fall on the floor and roll over. And Rumi would say, they understand what I'm saying and they don't even understand the words what I'm saying. And you have to constantly get it. And when you begin through love's grace to glimpse the super reality of everything, the infinite holiness of every being, then you cry out with your whole being, what Rumi is crying out in this poem. Give me ecstasy. Give me naked wonder, O my creator. Give birth to the beloved in me and let this lover die. Let this thousands of wrangling desires become one love. The ring of desire I wear is the seal of the king, and I know I have it only on loan, so I never take it off. The years of repentance are over. A new year has come that shatters and destroys 1,000 regrets a day. If you never knew this vertigo, this mad spring will make you totter. Oh, love, you are the universal soul, crown, and jail all at once. At once the prophet's call and our lack of belief. You have created us with thirsty hearts. You have bound us to the source of splendor. For you, my thorns have blossomed. My atoms embraced the worlds. And contemplating in my leaping atoms the universe makes my days stagger and sob with wonder. Look, don't you see? The wine is in the green grape. Existence in nothingness. Joseph, I beg you, see in your pit the crown and the kingdom. A thorn that has not blossomed cannot illumine the field. And how can a being made of water and clay find life if divine breath does not itself kindle it? So clap your hands and clap your hands again, and know each sound has its origin in the wine's own self-surrender. Oh, be silent now, because spring is here and the rose is dancing with its thorn, and beauties have come. They have come from the invisible and they are calling you home. One of the tremendous strengths of Sufism, and one of the reasons why it is absolutely essential for the great spiritual renaissance that is trying to take place in the world, that the truths of the Sufi path get out, not just to Sufis, but to all seekers, is that the greatness of the Sufi path is that it has never shirked from ordeal. It has never shirked from the necessity of pain in the work of transformation. It has never shirked away from the price of pain for love. If you love, St. Francis said, you suffer as a bird sings. You love and therefore you suffer because you want to love more and you want to burn away everything in you that does not love. And when you love more, you want to love more and you want to burn away everything in you that does not love. And when you love more, you actually open yourself to the great burnings you cannot even begin to understand, because when they come with terrible mercy and they do the great burning in you that finally flays you and batters you and shatters you and unmakes you and ruins you and remakes you and resurrects you. And that is what Rumi knew in the absolute core of his life, because Rumi's illumination, this huge illumination that has absolutely irrigated the entire planet, was bought with a huge crucifixion. The crucifixion first of being flayed alive by Shamses, his beloved's extreme and holy presence, which made him constantly feel how much in him still had to be transmuted. And then the crucifixion of Shamses' death, after only 3 years of being together, a death that drove him into madness, where his whole being disintegrated and the phoenix of eternal self rose from the ashes of his past. So when Rumi talks to us about the necessity of ordeal. He's talking as a brother to a sister and a brother. He's talking as a friend. He's saying, look here, don't be cowardly. This path will require a death. But that death is the death that you learn how to die when you learn how really to love. And that death brings you into an unimaginable beauty, an unimaginable glory, and an unimaginable power. But you must see that it's there, acknowledge that it's there, and practice and pray and meditate and contemplate and serve passionately, so when your time of killing comes, you will be trustful enough of the hand that murders you to remake you. And this is the real magnificence of the real path of love. And Rumi, I used to have this amazing teacher of Rumi called Eva Dvitre Meirovich. I envied many things about Eva, but especially her name, because I wanted to change my name to Dvitre Meirovich, but somehow we never got that far. Eva was the leading scholar of Rumi in Europe, and she translated all of Rumi into French. And one day I found her in a terrible rage because she'd read something frightfully, it was the beginning of the New Age, and she'd read something frightfully sort of rosebuddy about Rumi. And she was screaming around the apartment. She was saying, Rumi n'est pas une rose parfumée seulement. C'est une éclair, c'est une épée, c'est la suicide volontaire. Meaning, Rumi isn't just a perfumed rose, you know. He's a sword, he's a flash of lightning, he's voluntary suicide. This is very thrilling, because of course when you say, it's put two words in French like suicide volontaire, all of Paris looks stunned. That's so exciting. But of course, the voluntary suicide that's demanded of the path is a dying into the essence of love and a killing of everything in us that isn't. And there comes a moment when this becomes very, very clear, and you know that you are in the hands of the living God and that you cannot get out. And this is the moment that Rumi celebrates with terrible splendor in this poem. Love is the one who masters all things. And I have come to the moment when I am mastered totally by love. And by my passion of love for love, I have been ground sweet as sugar. O furious wind, I am only a straw before you. How could I know where I will be blown next? Whoever claims to have made a pact with destiny reveals himself a liar and a fool. What is any of us but a straw in a storm? And how could anyone make a pact with a hurricane? God is working everywhere, God's massive resurrection. So how can we pretend to act on our own? In the hand of love, I am like a cat in a sack. Sometimes love hoists me into the air. Sometimes love flings me to the ground. Sometimes love swings me round and round his head. I have no peace in this world or any other. The lovers of God fall, let's face it, into a furious river because they have surrendered themselves to love's commands. And like mill wheels, they turn day and night, constantly turning and turning and crying out. Isn't it a relief to hear the real truth about the path instead of the vanilla ice cream that's being sold in the supermarkets of our decadent New Age culture? Isn't it? Yeah. Because if you actually live the path, you experience these torments and these ordeals, and if you're being told that you should be constantly serene and cheerful, you feel you're failing when in fact you're breaking up. And it's very important to break up, because when you break up, more light, more love, more vision, more gnosis can be poured into you. Really, to experience the day of resurrection, you have to die first. For resurrection means making the dead come back to life. The whole world is racing in the wrong direction, for everyone is terrified of non-existence that is in reality the only certain refuge. How should we try to win real awareness? By renouncing all knowing. How should we look for salvation by giving up our personal salvation? How should we search for real existence by giving up our existence? How should we search for the fruit of the Spirit by not always greedily stretching out our hands? You have to come into the wildness of paradox. And when you come into that wildness, you realize something that is part of the mystery of the lover and the beloved, which is that the beloved is feasting of the pain of the lover. And that isn't sadism. It's because God is experiencing God through us. So when the God in us moans for the God in the eternal light, God experiences both together, and that gives another level of ecstasy to God. And that is where Rumi is speaking in this poem. I groan, and my groans ravish him, because he desires the groaning of the two worlds. How could I not groan at his deception? I am not in his drunkard circle. How could I not complain like the night without his day, without the grace of his gaze that illumines the day? His harshness is sugar to my soul, and I have dared to fall in love with my pain and my suffering so I can delight my matchless king and can turn grief's dust into collyrium for my eyes so their two seas can fill with pearls. Tears that his creatures weep for him in adoration and longing are pearls. Never say with fools that they are only tears. I seem to be complaining of the soul of souls, but really I am only telling my story. My heart says sometimes I am tormented by him, but I laugh at its absurd claim. Do me justice, O glory of the just. You are the throne, I am just your door's threshold. Yet where really are throne or threshold? In your district, where are us and I? O you whose soul soars above us and I, who permeates with subtle spirit both man and woman. When man and woman become one, you are that one. And when unities are annihilated, you are that unity. You have created this I and us to play the game of adoration with yourself. All the I's and you's will become one single soul and in the end melt into the beloved. All these things are true. Come, Lord, you who orders all things, who is beyond all appeal and all description. This body can only see you in its carnal way. It has to imagine your sadness, your laughter. But how could the heart imprisoned in such fantasies ever be worthy of even glimpsing you? Anyone imprisoned by sadness or laughter is only living off borrowed things. Because in the always green and boundless garden of love, there are many, many other fruits than grief or joy. My awareness is not bound to imagination or illusion. There is another state of being which is rare as you. By accepting the necessity of the ordeal and by accepting the mystery of God's feeding off in rapture the depth of the suffering because it comes from the depth of true love, then you can go through the great stage of fana, the great stage of annihilation. And from that, you will be reborn on the path of love into unity with the divine. And this is the stage that I've called in the last part of this symphony, fruition. And I'd just like, in the end of the celebration of the glory of the path, to read these poems out to you and let them fill you with the true enthusiasm. Why do we go through what we go through? On this path, we go through why we go through on this path for his sake, and also because we know from the testimony of beings like Rumi that if we can go through enough and love enough and open enough and give enough and serve enough and suffer enough and sing and dance enough, then what will be born in us is nothing less than the divine itself. And we will live here on this earth consciously as illumined divine human beings, being guided to ever fresher and ever greater transmutations of bliss and joy and power and peace. And that is worth everything. So, this is my favorite of all of his poems, and I read it really for us today in this room, and I read it to invoke Rumi and to invoke his great blessing upon us, and I read it in the devout and passionate hope that everyone in this room will taste some of this glory of the divine self that they secretly are and will become if they embrace the path and allow it to unfold in its wild, murderous, gorgeous logic within them. Cupbearer, pour the wine. Let it flow and keep flowing. I am sick of swinging between hope and fear. Shatter thought. I want nothing to do with it. Tear from my heart all unstable imaginings. Hack from their chains the shameless joys of passion. Dance into our assembly, beloved. Unveil your face. Scatter graces with each swirl of your robe of flame. Look at these madmen dancing out of themselves for you. See how they've stripped themselves of the rags of time. Even to detachment the heart can be attached. God knows, for the heart is a net spread for misery. Oh, transform my heart to a placeless place of safety. Carry it into the mountains where it dies in rapture into you. Come quickly. My body's tired of this claustrophobic country. Make it drunk. Set it free. Call to it. Come quickly. Offer me a cup overflowing with the wine of wonder so I can no longer tell my head from my feet. Don't give me bread or water or peace or sleep. Thirst for you is all I want because it is blood money for 100 souls like mine. Today, my beloved, you have swept me to your table. Let me stammer and stagger at the glory of your feast. News has raced through Black Mountain. Today is the day of joy, and you are an ass if you want anything but God, a sad and crazy ass trying to get fat on ash, knowing that the grass of ash dirties the mouth that eats it. Remember always what Muhammad said, stay away from the green of filthy places. Beloved, I am far from the grass of the ash pits. I am far from the dancing girls of the gardens. I am far from pride and I am far from vanity. I am drunk on the wine of the divine majesty. The thought of a final beauty leaps like a deer in my heart, like the moon racing up the sky, like a lily lifting its head suddenly from the river grass. See, all the world's images are running to your image. Scraps of iron drawn by a magnet of light. Diamond becomes stone before you. Lions, small flowers, the sun before you shrinks tinier than any atom. In you, this world is now blazing over like Mount Sinai, and each of its atoms foams with fire water, and each soul is becoming Moses, lost in the vision of God, and each creature is being soldered to you and its own origin, laughing at nothingness and clapping its own miracle, and each leaf in this eternal spring is opening around us, fresh and bright, and each atom is singing its discovery. Acceptance and surrender are the keys to happiness, and grace is the door to the peace beyond the mind. Don't be sad any longer. Your sadness is blasphemy. Blasphemy against the hand of splendor pouring you joy. Why batter your head forever against the jail wall? Look, the door has swung open to a rose garden, and a mystery of light is melting the barred windows. Why go on gaping and slavering like a whore at the faded paintings on the bathhouse wall? If you spit at the moon, the spit will fly back in your eyes. And if you try and tear his robe, it's your own that will tatter. A million, million fools boil angrily in this cauldron. Don't you know yet, surrender is the way to truth. One day a hedgehog swallowed the tail of a snake, threw back its head, rolled itself into a ball, and what did the snake do, poor idiot? It rammed itself against the hedgehog's spines and screamed and died, riddled all over with wounds. Had it had patience, it might have wriggled free. Be careful, be calm, pray, say this to yourself. Even the eye of the hurricane closes in the end. The Lord of the worlds has promised, I am with the patient. O patient one, grace us a drop of your patience. I've given you all I know. Now you must do what you can. Silence. My lover is smiling, and that smile makes all worlds. Let me read to you two more, and then let's go to our beds, drunk and sober. I'm deliberately reading Rumi in a way that you're probably not accustomed to. Because people read Rumi as if he was a kind of Connecticut Yankee fisherman. Sweetly and calmly. This is a person possessed. And he gave these poems in a state of ecstasy, dancing round pillars. They weren't written down, they were taken down. And they come molten from the source. And to have the full initiatory power that they have, they must try and be spoken in the way that they were meant to be spoken. This is how very often they are sung in Iran and in Jakarta and in India. They're sung with the huge passion of the naked soul because they come from that huge passion. These two poems say it all. One is the annihilation and the birth of the divine self, and the other is the rapture that divine self knows, living in the palace of the universe, one with the one, forever. Love's apocalypse, love's glory. One breath from the breath of the lover would be enough to burn away the universe and to scatter this insignificant world like grains of sand. The whole of the cosmos would become a sea, and sacred terror rubble this sea to nothing, and no human being would remain, and no creature. A smoke would come from heaven, there would be no more man or angel, and out of this smoke, flame would suddenly flash out across heaven, and that second, the sky would split apart, and neither space nor existence remain, and vast groans would rise up out of the breast of the universe, groans mingled with desolate moaning, and fire would eat up water, and water would eat up fire, and the waves of the sea of the void would drown in their flood the horsemen of day and night, and the sun itself would fade and would vanish before this flaming out of the soul of man. And do not ask anyone who is not intimate with the secrets when the intimate of the secret himself cannot answer you. Mars will lose its swagger. Jupiter burned the book of the world. The moon will not hold its empire. Its joy will be smirched with agony. Mercury will shipwreck in mud. Saturn burn itself to death. Venus, singer of heaven, play no longer her songs of joy. The rainbow will flee, and the cup and the wine. There will be no more happiness. There will be no more rapture. There will be no more wound. There will be no more cure. Water will no longer dance with light. Water no longer sweep the ground, and gardens no longer abandon themselves to laughter, and April's clouds no longer scatter their dew. There will be no more grief, no more consolation, no more enemy, no more witness, no more flute, no more song, no more lute, no more mode, no more high, no more low pitch. Causes will faint away, and the cupbearer will serve himself. The soul will recite, O my Lord Most High, and the heart will cry out, My Lord has always known best. Rise up. The painter of eternity has set to work one more time to trace miraculous figures on the crazy curtain of this world. God has lit a fire to burn the heart of the universe. The Son of God has the east for a heart. And the splendor of that east irradiates at all moments the Son of Adam, Jesus, Son of Mary. Glorious is the moment we sit in the palace. You and I. Two forms. Two faces. But a single soul. You and I. The flowers will blaze, and bird cries shower us with immortality the moment we enter the garden. You and I. All the stars of heaven will run out to gaze at us as we burn like the full moon itself, you and I. The fire-winged birds of heaven will rage with envy in that place where we laugh ecstatically, you and I. What a miracle, you and I. Entwined in the same nest. What a miracle. You and I, one love, one lover, one fire. In this world and the next and all the others and the next in an ecstasy without end. And let me read in conclusion Aflaki's wonderful account of what this beautiful man became. You know, Rumi didn't just give us the greatest mystical. There was a scholar monk from the country around Constantinople who had heard of the knowledge, sweetness, and humility of Rumi. And full of affection for him, although he was of a different religion, he set out and arrived at Konya looking for him. The monks of Konya went to meet him and received him with honor. He then asked to visit Rumi and met him by chance on the road. The monk prostrated three times before him. And when he rose up, he saw that Rumi had also prostrated himself. It is said that he bowed his head 33 times to the monk. Crying out loud and tearing his robe, the monk exclaimed, O Sultan of religion, how can you take to such an extreme point the humiliation and self-abasement you show me, who am just a miserable wretch full of faults? Rumi replied, Our Prophet gave us the following hadith and sacred saying. Happy is he whom God gave wealth, beauty, honor, and power, and who has been generous in his wealth, chaste in his beauty, humble in his honor, just in his power. How could I not be humble before the servants of God? And why would I not be honest and show my own misery and nothingness? If I did not, what would I be useful for? And the word I would like to leave you with is none of the glorious words that I've been using, but that word, useful. Why do we go on the path? We go on the path for his sake. We go on the path for the sake of becoming what we could become. And then we discover something very strange, that we're just turned into slaves and skivvies. We're made to clean out the toilets of the world. We become, at last, useful. Because at last, we are real, ecstatic, humble, and so able constantly to receive divine energy and divine guidance. No clapping.